Okay, welcome. You're listening to the Kraz Files podcast. And this is a shortened, sort of cropped version of a podcast I did earlier this year with Dr. Rima. And the podcast was called Autism and Inside Job, which is up on our website in its entirety. But I just wanted to get this particular information out because the podcast went on for a little while. But her autism information was unbelievable, and I wanted to get this out for all our listeners, and I hope that they can share it with their loved ones and everyone they know, because she really lays it out here. And so please enjoy this talk by Dr. Rima. It's unbelievable information that she went through. Thank you.
I am, as your listeners probably know, the Natural Solutions Foundation's medical director. And that means that I was trained in the allopathic form of medicine. And I realized early on that it was nonsense, that it was toxic, that it was well-organized, but that it was well-organized like a cult. Because that's exactly what it is. It's a cult of belief in which you are, in which you are intended to surrender your rational thought so that the irrational beliefs of the system permeate your thoughts, your actions, and your decisions. And when you think about doctors who may be well-intentioned, but when you think about doctors making irrational decisions and having irrational thoughts, but taking care of your body and the bodies of those you love, including your children, the phrase, be afraid, be very afraid, comes to mind. I think you should be afraid. Now, medicine is permeated with illusions and with bad ideas, with poor science, with make-believe science, and with bought and paid for pseudoscience. And one of the worst and most durable bad ideas is vaccination. Vaccination was born in pus and deceit, and it's only gotten worse. What do I mean by that? Edward Jenner was not a physician. He bought his medical license, which back then was just as illegal as it is now. He paid £25 sterling for it from the University of Edinburgh. And he was not a scientist. He would decide what the results of his, quote, experiments were going to be. And he published the results of the experiments before he carried out the experiments, if he did carry out the experiments. He had taken the idea, he had taken the idea from an earlier body of knowledge brought back from Turkey that diseases could be prevented by exposing people to those diseases through breaking the skin. And that doesn't always work. And he turned it into a myth. And the myth is, if I take a bit of pus from the cowpox lesion of somebody, it will somehow prevent smallpox if I stick it into another person. Couple of problems here. One, there is no such thing as cowpox. What he was dipping his needle into before putting it into other people was the stage 2 open pus-filled syphilitic sores of people who were infected with a highly communicable disease that was raging through Europe at the time, syphilis. Second thing is that when the British government actually enforced the laws that they had passed, that every child had to be injected or inoculated against smallpox, the incidence of smallpox went up 275%. In addition to which, in the tropics where they didn't have syphilis, they used the open pus-filled sores of people with leprosy. And what was happening was that wherever the British Empire planted its flag and inoculated the people subject to it, they spread horrendous disease. They spread smallpox, they spread syphilis, and they spread leprosy. Now, by about 1853, the British Parliament was getting so many complaints of perfectly healthy children dying of introduced syphilis, dying very quickly and dying very horribly, that they decided to convene a blue ribbon panel of inquiry. A two-year panel was carried forth. And at the end of that, they discovered, and this is public documentation, by the way, they discovered that they had made a dreadful mistake, that Jenner was a mountebank, that inoculation didn't work, that they had killed, maimed, wounded, harmed a vast number of people, of their own people and others, and they had a quandary. Okay, what do we do about this? Do we fess up to the British public and allow us how we made a terrible, terrible mistake and this could damage our careers? Or do we behave as politicians behave across the timeline and around the world and cover up our very, very, very bad decisions and pretend that it didn't happen that way? Well, of course, they chose the second. Now, in those days, Edward Jenner received a stipend from a grateful government of £10,000 sterling a year, which was an inconceivable amount of money. So the British Parliament, as part of their whitewash, doubled his stipend until he should die to £20,000 sterling a year. I don't know what that would be in modern dollars. Maybe it would be, I don't know, $90 million. I can't imagine how much money it is. Anyhow, with that, the entire fraudulent and deceitful area of vaccination was propelled forward as something that was glorious and respectable and useful, and the money began to roll in. Now, we have to fast forward to Germany. Now, before the Second World War, during the reign of Kaiser Wilhelm, eugenics was introduced to Germany. It was introduced by John D. Rockefeller, the same man who owned and controlled the world's output of petroleum. John D. Rockefeller was convinced in error that the internal combustion engine, which powers our airplanes and our cars and trucks and so on, would never amount to much. It would never become widespread enough to consume his world control of, or to consume the oil that his control of the oil production of the world was allowing him to produce. So he wanted another stream of consumption. He sent his agents to Europe, and they came back and they said, "Hey, boss, listen, there's this new industry called the pharmaceutical industry, and the pharmaceutical industry makes rearrangements of carbon molecules. It's a flowering of the organic chemistry renaissance explosion that was taking place in the Industrial Revolution times. And they said, you know, they make their drugs from the petroleum product that's left at the bottom of a separation tower, a cracking tower in the petroleum industry, this gunk that nobody can use, thick, gluey tar. They said, hey, boss, why don't you buy up the pharmaceutical industry and then you can control that? And John D. Rockefeller said, righto. And he did. He bought the controlling interests of the pharmaceutical industry of Europe, which was the pharmaceutical industry of the world. Then he said, okay, now I got to get somebody to distribute this stuff because nobody in their right minds would want these drugs because they're caustic and they're dangerous and they're toxic and they don't work nearly as well as homeopathy and osteopathy and chiropractic and herbalism and diet and exercise and so on. And he knew that. By the way, until the day he died at 94, he used nothing other than homeopathic remedies. That's rather interesting. Anyway, the story of how he created allopathic medicine is now pretty widely known. He used money, influence, deceit, and the propaganda brilliance of Edward Bernays, Sigmund Freud's nephew, to create a belief system in which people no longer believed that they knew anything about their bodies, and to create a legal system in which everybody else who was practicing health care was given a choice to either surrender their licenses, because homeopaths and osteopaths and chiropractors and herbalists and everybody else was licensed, they were either given a choice to surrender their licenses or to go to jail. Well, most people made the obvious choice. And then the only people left standing were the white coat guys, and they were guys, not guys and gals, and the American public, which had been taught to believe that it no longer knew anything about its own body or need or health, was taught that the guys in the white coat knew everything about their body and health. And it was a concerted and brilliant public relations deceit campaign. Well, Rockefeller was very, very interested in vaccines. And when President Teddy Roosevelt, walk softly and carry a big stick, should really be walk softly and carry a big syringe. Because Teddy Roosevelt, as President of the United States, decided that he needed a biological weapon with which he could subdue everybody that got in his way. He was quite an imperialist. And so Rockefeller turned his pharmaceutical industry to the project of creating a biological weapon, and they came up with vaccines, perfect delivery system, convince people it's for their good, and kill them. Now, the great Spanish flu of 1918 was actually a Rockefeller invention. They didn't know as much about the immune system as we do now, so they were a little bit clumsier and kludgier. But what they did was take a vaccine with things that would make you sick in it. Of course, they didn't know about viruses, but they knew about things that would make you sick. And they reproduced that in eggs and so on. And then they filtered it a little bit, not too much, and they added all kinds of horrible stuff, and they injected it into a group of soldiers in Kansas, in fact, Manhattan, Kansas. And then they sent these soldiers, this is during World War I, of course, they sent these soldiers to New York City to go on leave, and then they put them in a troop ship where they were not allowed up on deck, and they were below decks, breathing stale air, eating pretty wretched food, terribly sick, terribly stressed. And they got to the England, which was not the UK then, I was stumbling over whether to call it the UK, they got to England, and they were taken out, and they were exposed to poison gas as part of their, quote, training, with gas masks that actually leaked a little bit, which, of course, made them vilely sick. Well, what they were doing was creating an environment in which the viruses, which they had not identified as existing yet, but whatever it was that made people sick, would get stronger. In other words, the viruses would mutate. And then they sent these folks out. And, of course, they spread this newly virulent virus. And that's how we got the Spanish flu in New York and in the European continent. And this is an interesting side note, Eli Lilly had patented aspirin. Nobody knew how it worked, but it certainly did make fevers go away. And when young, healthy people, mothers, workers, teachers, factory workers, soldiers, when they got sick, they couldn't afford to go to bed and be sick with the flu, so they took aspirin. It suppressed their fevers and their aches, and 2 weeks later, their lungs filled up with blood, and they drowned in their own fluids within hours, hemorrhaging wildly as they went. That was the horror of the Spanish flu, and we now know that it was because aspirin suppressed the fever that the body was trying to mount in order to kill the virus, because viruses are not very heat stable. And so without that, people got over the immediate symptoms. The viruses kept on replicating without the immune system being able to do much about it until finally they overwhelmed the body and people died not of liquid in their lungs or blood in their lungs. They died of what caused it, which is a cytokine storm. Well, that's one of the important pieces to understand, that vaccines came from lies and deceit. They were immediately weaponized very early on, and they don't do any good, but oh my, they do produce money. So vaccines began to be produced for this and that and the other thing, and the pseudoscience saying that they worked was very, very popular among the fiction writers who published in the medical journals. And medical journals always have been corrupt entities. They are corrupted by the fact that they have to survive, and therefore they have to raise money, and therefore they have to take ads, and therefore the pharmaceutical companies which place the ads own the content. It's gotten particularly egregious lately, but it's always been a corrupted system. And why do we have such high reverence and such high respect for pharmaceutical-controlled, supposed peer-reviewed medical journals? Because of propaganda. They're tools of basically psychological operations, and they misinform doctors and they misinform patients for the benefit of the people who make money, the drug companies. So and we could go on and on about that. So now we have the swine flu epidemic of 1976 in the United States, in which President Reagan announced that everybody was going to be vaccinated against the swine flu. People started dying. They started getting very, very ill, and large numbers of people developed something called Guillain-Barré. Now, if you look at the symptoms of Guillain-Barré, this is a post-vaccine injury which can kill you. You see that the symptoms are absolutely identical to polio. But you can't call it polio because you can't say you gave people polio, can you? And what happened was that they gave it a new name, just as they have given polio a new name around the world. They call it non-polio acute flaccid paralysis. And just as the CDC says on its website, that the principal cause of polio in the world today is polio vaccination. And oh, by the way, measles vaccination causes measles, and the flu vaccination causes the flu. And each vaccine causes either symptoms that are expressed and can be seen, or subclinical, that is to say, hidden symptoms. And anybody who is vaccinated against a viral disease or a bacterial disease becomes a dissemination vehicle for that disease. When you get vaccinated against the measles, you are now a danger to unvaccinated and vulnerable people, because for at least 21 days, you will be shedding the altered and newly virulent measles virus. Understand that everything you think you know about vaccines has to be stood on its head. The unvaccinated are no danger to anybody. The vaccinated are a danger. And some people, this is demonstrably clearly shown, some people go on shedding for years and years and years with no symptoms for themselves. Well, anyway, the vaccines have terribly dangerous things in them besides the bacteria and the viruses, besides the egg protein and the fetal cell protein and squalene and aluminum and polysorbate 80, which is an infertility agent, and fluoride and monosodium glutamate, which is a neurotoxin. The vaccines have something in them called mercury. And the mercury got there because in about 1922, after John D. Rockefeller had supported the formation of the FDA so he could control the regulation of drugs, the FDA said, well, we have this list of things that we don't have to test. They're called generally regarded as safe or GRAS substances. And if something is on the GRAS list, it is grandfathered, so you can put it into food, drug, whatever, without being worried about the FDA saying, oh my goodness, no, you can't put that in. And Eli Lilly, which was making scads and scads of money off its patented product called Thimerosal, which is 49.5% mercury by weight, Eli Lilly said, great, we'll put Thimerosal in every vaccine because it's a, it's an antibiotic. Well, it's not. In fact, fungus is very, very happy in the presence of mercury. So if you want to make sure that you have a good chance to have fungi in your virus or vaccine, put some mercury in. We'll put it there. And the FDA said, well, is it safe? And Eli Lilly said, tell you what, we'll do a little piece of research here. And the FDA said, cool, okay. So Eli Lilly took 11 patients who had meningitis, and they were unconscious, and the prognosis was that they were going to die. This is before antibiotics. This is before people were smart enough to use nanosilver, 10 parts per million, which would surely have brought them back out of their coma caused by the inflammation of infection. Yeah. And so Eli Lilly took these 11 patients who were all in coma and whose prognosis was death, and they injected Thimerosal into their intravenous lines. All 11 of them died. So Eli Lilly reported back to the FDA, and the FDA accepted the following. Thimerosal is safe because these patients all expired, but they would have died anyway. And the FDA said, okay, that's cool. And they listed Thimerosal as a GRAS, or generally regarded as safe, substance. Time went by, and autism became a notable disease. Now, there have always been autistic persons. There have always been people who missed social signals. There have always been people who had difficulty with human connection, with any other kind of connection, cold, wooden people, or people who couldn't talk, or people who had bizarre behaviors like flapping and so on, but they were rare, very, very, very rare. When I was in medical school, there was about one child in 10,000 who was autistic. And you may say, well, perhaps it was because of a reporting difference. And the answer is nope, because I know how I was trained to diagnose autism back then. I graduated in 1970. So we're talking about starting in 1968 when I first started my psychiatry undergraduate training and was introduced to autistic children and worked with them. And I know how the diagnosis is done now. And fundamentally, except for fancier bells and whistle and an iPad instead of a clipboard, it is identical. So there were rare children who were autistic. And there were rare children who had neurological learning disabilities, rare. And there were a few, very, very few children who had cancer, like virtually none. When there was a cancer patient, a pediatric cancer patient in the hospital who didn't have something called a Wilms tumor, which is a kidney tumor that was not so terribly, terribly rare. But any other kind of pediatric cancer patient, all of the students and residents would be called in to that child's room, and the professor would lecture about the child and the child's cancer, and we would all stand there and gawk, golly gee whiz, look, a kid with cancer, wow. Well, it didn't do much for the kid, and it really wasn't very useful education, but it's what they do in medical school. So the point is that it was truly rare. Now, the World Health Organization, which is a private organization supported by the pharmaceutical industry, which is why they never met a vaccine they didn't love. The World Health Organization, and it's also a depopulation organization, according to its own documents. The World Health Organization says that any child born after 2000 has a greater than 50% chance of dying before its parents, and that by the year 2020, 50% of children will either have died of cancer or have survived cancer treatment by the time they are 18. Now we have, among the Somalian children who live in Minneapolis who are fully vaccinated, we have one autistic child in 36. How much worse will it get? A lot worse. A professor from MIT this year said that she anticipates that by the year 2025, which is only 10 years from now, one child in two will be autistic. Now, why? Why is this being allowed to happen? And by the way, aluminum is equally horrendous, and there's a lot of aluminum in every vaccine, pretty much. Why is this being allowed to happen? Well, just imagine for a moment that you are the mother of two autistic children whom you adopted in early childhood, and you have raised to be young men who are certainly limited, certainly impaired in every dimension, but who are now capable of performing work tasks in sheltered workshops. And for these young men, that was a very, very huge achievement. Well, the mom happens to be Christina England. And Christina and I, she's a remarkable researcher and writer, and she deals in this area continually. And we were talking, and she was talking about the fact that Her sons had more job opportunities now than they had ever had before because Goldman Sachs was preferentially hiring autistic workers. And Vodafone was preferentially hiring high-functioning autistic workers. And just recently, this is after the conversation, but Microsoft announced that it will be preferentially hiring autistic workers. And Lord Larry Friend of the British House of Parliament announced that the ideal worker in Parliament announced that the ideal worker is in fact the autistic worker, because first of all, they can be paid as disabled people, and that's very good for the company's bottom line. Second of all, they are docile, they like routine, they don't make trouble, they don't have enough social skills to band together to form unions or become rebellious. They can be replaced easily by someone else. They're trained to obey very easily, and so on and so on. It was quite a horrifying description of the utility of the damaged. And then Christina said, you know, I think that we're seeing something here that's really important. And she and I talked, and I gave the name the England Hypothesis to what I'm about to tell you in honor of her decades of dedicated struggle to bring her boys to a place where they could be self-sustaining, even at a minimal level, where they could be useful members of society and feel good about themselves, and to her endless dedication to the honesty that is required to bring this information forward. I said, and that is why it's called the England Hypothesis. And here's the England Hypothesis. Just suppose that Aldous Huxley, who was a very, very powerful and influential man, he helped to found and to shape the CIA and its mind control programs. He came of a distinguished family of eugenicists and scholars. He and his brother Julian were deeply involved in shaping social policies that have led to much of the chaos that we have now. They foisted the psychedelic revolution on the world using psyops and pretending that Timothy Leary and Alan Watts had been fired from Harvard, when in fact this was all quite well planned in order to make them rebels that people could flock to and would use drugs and so on. Well, they say Aldous Huxley wrote a book which was written in 1931 and published in 1932 called Brave New World, in which there are the alphas, the betas, the gammas, the deltas, and the epsilons. And the delta workers are made into manipulable, infertile, docile, limited, intellectually limited, repetitive, disposable workers. They are made so by manipulation starting in utero. Well, they didn't have uteruses, they were in glass bottles. Starting in bottle-o, if you'll forgive me that way of saying it. And then when they were decanted, they were further, that is the equivalent of born in his novel, they were further manipulated with chemical toxins that would change the way their brains functioned, limiting them and creating the perfect technician. These were the deltas. And it suddenly occurred to me that we were looking at generations of people who were being turned into deltas with the intentional manipulation of the chemicals and the toxins to which they are being exposed, starting in utero. There is no possible justification under any circumstances for the vaccination of a pregnant woman. We know from very good scientific evidence that the toxins pass the blood-brain barrier, pass the placental barrier and go directly into the brain and cells of the fetus, changing their genetic makeup. And yet the push is on that every pregnant woman has to be medicated against potential postpartum depression. And we know that those drugs are highly toxic to the fetus and the fetus nervous system, and has to be given flu shots and this shot and that shot. And this makes no sense at all. We know that babies are jabbed immediately upon birth with a wildly toxic hepatitis B vaccine. Why? Well, hepatitis B is endemic among 10% of the population in small regions of Asia. And therefore, the public health people said, we must vaccinate every baby born in the world with hepatitis B, a disease which is caused by contact with bodily fluids in sexual encounters or in medical emergency room workers who might cut themselves and come into contact with somebody's infected bodily fluids. Babies are not known to work in emergency rooms or engage in risky sexual practices in the main. And yet we must vaccinate every child. And if the child isn't vaccinated in many countries, we take the child away from the parents until we can jab it full of toxins. Why? Because according to the England hypothesis, and there is a great deal of information that I'll be happy to share with you, that's exactly what's happening. Now, back to 2002, 2003. I had a patient in my practice who was a head of state, not Queen Beatrix and not the Queen of England. I can't tell you who it was because she too, although she's a psychopathic monster, she deserves medical privacy just like everybody else. So one day, she allowed us how it was almost time for the great culling to begin. And that's a story that I've told many times. And I said, culling of what? And she said, useless eaters. I said, what's a useless eater? She said, not what, who. And she explained useless eaters were people who were consuming their non-renewable natural resources. And I said, well, how many of these useless eaters do you want to get rid of? And she said, 90%. And I said, 90% of what? She said, the world's population. And it turns out that she was giving me the party line of the World Health Organization, the United States government, which holds, following the doctrine that was written by Henry Kissinger in 1974 in a secret document called National Security Memorandum 200, that, and I quote, population reduction must be the first priority of United States foreign policy, beginning with the third world. That document was declassified in 1988. I have no idea why, but it was, and it's still part of foreign policy doctrine. So as hard as it was to think about it then, now we can think about it easily because it's come forward in many, many ways. Well, I said to her, okay, I don't get it. Your immense wealth was built on selling large amounts of shit to large numbers of people. So how are you going to maintain your enormous wealth? And she said, we are moving from the mercantile era to the neo-feudal era. There will be the neo-aristocrats at the top, we, and then there will be our servants and servitors below us, and then below them, the technicians. And that requires 10% of the current population of the planet, no more. And now when you put that together with the intentional manipulation and tweaking of the toxic effects of vaccines on the nervous system of virtually every child that they can reach on the planet. And by the way, Bill Gates has been found guilty of crimes against humanity in India for what he and the Gavi Foundation and the World Health Organization have done to the young, poor, impoverished, parasite-ridden peasantry, the girls of India, with the HPV vaccine. Surprise, 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 they've made them infertile. Well, well, who'd have thunk? Now, I have to tell you that in addition to damaging the neurological capability of vast swaths of humanity through the intentional use of toxic repeated doses, I have to tell you that at the same time, the infertility issue is a very, very big one, because in 1974, the same year that Henry Kissinger brought forth his despicable National Security Memorandum 200, that same year, the World Health Organization, for whom the word despicable is far too kind, created a commission at the request of the United Nations and the United States to investigate the creation of vaccines that would make people infertile. And they succeeded. And those vaccines have been used against women and documented now in India, in Kenya, in Brazil, in Guatemala, in Thailand, and in a host of other countries. The vaccine makes the woman produce antibodies against an essential hormone that she needs to ever carry a pregnancy. If she's pregnant, she immediately aborts the pregnancy. She can never get pregnant again. If she's not yet pregnant, she never will get pregnant. And indeed, I have in my possession a memorandum, an internal memorandum from the World Health Organization in Geneva, dated 1985, which states that the smallpox vaccination program, the smallpox eradication program, did not eradicate smallpox, but it did eliminate, and I quote, 150 million excess sub-Saharan Africans. That means black people. How did it do that? By rendering the women who would have had those children and their progeny would have followed therefrom infertile. The smallpox vaccine did not eliminate smallpox. And in fact, if you go to tinyurl.com/Dr. Rima India Paper, that's DRRIMA India Paper, you can download a paper that I gave, an invitational paper that I gave at the first All India Congress on medical education in February in Mangalore. You can download it and see conclusively that no vaccine has ever eliminated any disease, childhood or otherwise. The only things that have eliminated all of the diseases that that are communicable are clean water, sanitation, hygiene, and an improved diet with sufficient vegetables and protein to support health. Because every childhood and every communicable disease was dropping precipitously before the introduction of the vaccine that supposedly eradicated it. Every one. And most of those diseases actually slowed in their decline after the introduction of the vaccine. Some, like smallpox, jumped up by 275 or more percent. Vaccines prevent nothing except health. Vaccines cure nothing except pharmaceutical financial shortfalls. Vaccines are deceitful. Vaccines are unnecessary. Vaccines are exceedingly dangerous. And one of the things that they produce is dulled, deficient, demented deltas. Now, I have produced, along with the other good folks in the Natural Solutions Foundation, we have produced a webinar specifically about this issue. It's called Don't Delta Me, Dude, or the way we discussed it was by saying Don't Delta Me, Dude. And that webinar is available if you go to tinyurl.com /autism inside job, because we had a webinar on September 11th, 2013 on the England hypothesis and the documentation of exactly what I'm saying. And it is powerfully documented. And that webinar was called Autism and Inside Job, like 9/11 and Inside Job. And we couldn't get, it was a 3.5 hour webinar. We couldn't get the electronics right. And after about 30 minutes, everybody who was watching it, but not Ralph Fusitola, my co-host and co-trustee, or I, everybody else around the world saw on their computer screen a sign. And the sign said, Natural Solutions Foundation is not hosting a webinar at this time. And they will never host a webinar. We did not see that sign. That was not available to us. So what we did was we went ahead, we recorded the webinar with 3.5 hours of video and abundantly researched ebook, very chunky ebook, and we made it available to people at the link that I just gave you, which is tinyurl.com/autisminsidejob. And oh, by the way, there's another webinar, also 3.5 hours, with another world famous faculty, and that's on shaken baby syndrome. And that's another vaccine tragedy intentionally produced. Please go to tinyurl.com/SBS hoax. That stands for shaken baby syndrome. SBS hoax. And before I stop talking, I'll give you one more link. If you go to tinyurl.com/Mayday Marathon and enter your email there, we will send you an ebook with 16 hours of podcasts with people like Adam Kraz, with people like Vera Scheibner, with people like Sherry Tenpenny, talking about vaccine truth, because God knows you get enough vaccine lies everywhere. And we decided to do a vaccine truth program, and that is completely free. And you'll also get a subscription to our newsletter with that as our gift to you, so that you can be part of the information flow. That's tinyurl.com/Mayday Marathon. Now, other than that, Adam, I have absolutely nothing to say.
Great information, Dr. Reimer, as usual, and very important. I'm going to put this up very soon, and I hope that people can really go through what you just said.
I'd like to say two things. One is, anyone can babble out and prattle on, and it doesn't mean that what they say is true. But the things that I've been sharing with you are abundantly documented. This is not imagination. This is not conspiracy theory. This is conspiracy. Quite different. And so that, if you do access the webinar and the ebook at tinyurl.com, Autism Inside Job, you will have a chance to see the abundant documentation. I would love to be wrong. It would give me great pleasure to stake in this. And there's something else that I would like to do with your permission, Adam, and that is give the links at which people can find more information on this and the other topics that we deal with. If you will go to, first of all, Facebook. Our Facebook page is Natural Solutions Foundation. You can follow me on Twitter, and I hope you do, because I put out a huge amount of information through Facebook and Twitter. My Twitter is at Dr. Dr. Rima, R-I-M-A, Labo, L-A-I-B-O-W, at Dr. Rima Labo. And then our principal website, and we have many others, but our principal website is www.drrima.com. And of course, we have a radio show too called, you'll be surprised, the Dr. Rima Truth Reports. And that's every Monday through Friday, every weekday on VTNradio.com, VTNradio.com. And it's, I think, quite important. We put a tremendous amount of validated information out on a wide variety of topics. So there are a lot of ways to find us, and the point of finding us is that not only do we give you information, but we give you meaningful action items that you can take to flood the decision makers so that they are overwhelmed by the public response. And then here's the dirty little secret that they don't want you to know. They step back every single time we raise our voices in a loud enough unison and say the most essential thing that we can say to these crazy people. Don't you dare. And